serious. This is serious podcasting.
That sound means it's time for the Film Drunk Podcast. That guy on the mic over there is Brett.
Hello!
The Dark Lord of Podcasting. We got, you know, the whole crew. Matt Lieb, the irregular regular. He's been practicing his tube and throat singing.
Yeah.
And, of course, we got future NFL superstar, Brendan. This is going well.
And everyone's tuned out.
I do not like those sounds. I am leaving.
There goes our Stitcher Award.
A lot of things on the space stocket today. We got Perry Grip coming back for a second appearance. Do you realize the last one was Frogcast 40? Was the last time he was on?
God, we may remember, but you don't.
Yeah. Well, it was there was Lindy West was on, and we talked about Sucker Punch. That's how long ago it was.
Wow.
Yeah.
Damn. Wow. Still have not seen that.
Yeah. No reason to, really.
No.
I saw it.
I spent like a hungover morning watching it, and it was a waste of time.
Yeah. I saw it in the theater.
Ouch.
Yeah. With a guy who actually could tube and throat sing.
Yeah. Was it Stephen Jenkins?
No, it was Mean Dave. Do you know Mean Dave?
He can tube and throat sing?
Yeah. First of all, Tuvin with a V.
Tuvin, okay.
It's from Tuva.
Mean Dave. Okay. That was Tuvin.
And yeah, no, he was the one who introduced me to it. And I was like, that's a cool trick. I didn't know it was a singing style. I thought it was just him fucking around. And, but anyways, he didn't do that in the theater, but I did see it with him. And it was a great story. One of the best stories I've ever told.
I'd say top five.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Mean Dave.
Seeing Sucker Punch with Mean Dave.
Yeah, he was just...
please okay. Don't do that for the rest of this time.
All right, and I'm done. Bam, 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 bam. Back to the...
We also saw Fight Church.
I did not.
Did you watch it, Brendan?
I thought we were watching Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow.
Is that a movie?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I watched Fight Church.
Remember when Brett thought that was going to be like super good?
I did not think that.
You definitely did.
That is not something I would think.
You thought 300 was going to be good.
Yeah, 300 had the good trailer.
Yeah, it is a good trailer.
Yeah, it's a good trailer.
Yeah, I watched Fight Church.
I did too. No one fucking cares if I saw it though, because then I can't contribute about movies. Is that it? Yeah, I saw it, and I am confused about my feelings about it.
Not the right song.
I kind of like that as an audio drop.
I like though. That's Matt's internal monologue of his feelings, where he's like, I got some weird feelings. And they're like,
if you plugged a headphone jack into Matt Lieb's ear, that's
like, what's the sounds my brains are making?
I don't think you can tell a kid, don't bully in school, you know, be civil to your classmates, and then take them to a fight where you have two men or two women in a cage kneeing each other in the head or slamming their fist into someone lying on the ground.
There's a lot of Bob Riley. I remember Bob Riley. I forgot about that guy. He's like, if you follow MMA, there's this guy who used to be a state senator in New York who had like this hard-on for not legalizing MMA, and it was all
that was like the hill he decided to die on.
Yeah, and he definitely died on that hill. Yeah. And it was just so silly because there's that one point where he's in his office and he's like, now how many of you are for the legalization of MMA? And they're all like younger kids, and like all the hands go up. Yeah. And he's like, well, I disagree with that.
Well, then he goes, well, how about who doesn't want it legalized? And then one girl kind of like sheepishly puts her hand up, yeah. And the wrist is cocked at such an angle, kind of like the I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's like one, so it's like, oh, like she's a waitress carrying a tray, kind of slowly ascending.
Yeah.
So she's not committed to it. Her hand doesn't go like shoom. You know, it's like, eh.
Yeah.
She probably just felt bad for him.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's like, that's kind of what it seemed like. Sympathy hand. It's got to be rough to be a senator and have to pick your pet cause.
Yeah.
Where you have to just decide from all these stupid fucking things. And they probably give you a list, like a dim sum menu, where they're just like, what stupid fucking thing are you going to hang your stupid fucking hat on?
Yeah.
And I'm sure he's probably, lobbied, too.
And he's probably like this 65-year-old guy, and all his friends are like, man, this MMA sure seems barbaric. And
what can we do to stop?
He probably got lobbied by like the boxing industry, like you know, 25 years ago, and then they went away, and then most of his friends are dead, but he's kind
of
just like...
Some memory of a dark looming presence. I thought I got money from somebody sinister.
At this point, he's got to stay 100% committed to it, you know?
Yeah.
He literally died on that hill. Like, he just was like, and I'm retired. Like, he just decided that was it.
So he didn't literally die.
Well, no, he literally died on that. I thought that's what retired means.
He got punched to death.
State Senate,
ironically, punched him right to death.
They don't retire. They don't retire.
They just die. No one actually leaves fucking politics. Are you kidding?
As far as the movie goes, I thought it was interesting. You know, all these like pastors that punch each other. But I also thought it kind of got trapped in like this argument between religious people about whether like MMA is godly or not, and I kind of wished it would have taken a step broader and sort of fit the sort of MMA preacher. It definitely fits into this broader context of this weirdly like masculine where the pastor, the
macho piousness,
the macho pastor has become like a thing.
Yeah,
especially if you read The Great Derangement, one of Matt Taibbi's books, where he goes along with this mega church in Texas, and like every pastor that he goes with, it's like this guy who, you know, wears affliction shirts and like flexes his muscles and
it is a weird like crossover. It's a weird intersection of cultures.
So I wasn't as interested in whether like MMA is compatible with Christianity.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, like the kind of the central question they posit is like, can you love thy neighbor while kneeing him in the face? And I don't think that's a particularly interesting question.
Sort of?
I mean, you've got like Bible thumpers who've been playing football forever. And in fact, it's like kind of this cottage industry within football. Like every NFL team has their own like pastor.
Right.
And then that guy uses that to promote his church and get a shit ton of donations that he doesn't pay any taxes on. And
you just blew the whistle.
I did. I did. You know, so there's like all that's been going on forever. It's like, you stand over that man whose leg you just broke and you give the glory to God. You know, so it's like, I don't think that question is particularly interesting at this point, especially, you know, I'm with you. I don't think that question is very interesting, but I do think the subculture of the strange intersection between this like hyper-masculine religiousness, this piousness, is very strange.
Especially because it's gone sort of full circle where, you know, it used to be Christianity was like the meek shall inherit the earth. And then somehow, like especially in the Bush era, that like there suddenly became this.
The Bush era? You mean the fucking Inquisition? Like, at no point was Christianity ever meek shall inherit the earth.
Officially it was.
Yeah. But I mean, not since like Rome split was the. Come on.
You mean the Great Schism?
Come on. Yeah. There's always been an inherent violence in Christianity.
That was more of a cultural battle. That was more like a kill the infidel sort of thing, which I see is slightly different.
If you proselytize, sometimes that is done with violence inherently.
Yeah.
There is absolutely no contradiction in violently assaulting a person and getting them to subscribe to your religion. Same fucking game.
What about Mormons?
But there definitely is a split. I did think it was interesting where,
peaceful,
you know, the Catholic guy. I like how the Catholic guy is like, you know, these freaking Protestants, they're just going around here preaching without. It's like you just gave somebody a car without the instruction manual or something. Where the Catholics are like, I don't know what they're doing out there. They're just they're just tearing ass around the neighborhood, like burning out the brakes, and dropping the clutch over there,
doing
and then,
donuts in the parking lot.
He was a particular brand of obnoxious, though. That
oh, for sure, but
that priest
Duffy,
but Father, but compared Father to this Duffy, compared guy. To this guy, I thought this speech was the most interesting of the whole movie.
We have an obligation as Christians
to
defend. Sometimes that requires killing.
Yeah, see?
The call of the gospel is turn the other cheek in light of religious persecution.
What does that even mean? Like, turn the other cheek to make the Bible harder? I don't understand.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's well, you give them the dangerous cheek and then you kill them with it. You're like, oh, joke's on you. This is my hard cheek.
I think
you're going to taste my hard cheek.
I believe it's the same guy who earlier goes, people say MMA is violent. And if you look at the definition of violent, which you know is always going to be like, when someone takes it, the argument that way, you're like, oh, this is going to be good. Which is like in high school English, they're like, the worst way you can start an argument is by reading a dictionary definition. So like, He's like, well, if you look at the root of the word violent, it means to violate someone. So if two people are willingly Jesus going into a ring, it's not violent. And I'm like, you just got to own that shit, man. That's why I love MMA. I love MMA because it's violent. I love football because it's violent. I want to watch violent sports.
Wait, so did they just hand the mic to a bunch of religious people and be like, pontificate on religion and violence?
I mean, there's a little of everything.
I've had people bring up the turn the other cheek. And I've had people bring up the turn the other cheek in the context of watching somebody get raped. I'm like, that's...
Find me this man. Yeah. Find me this man who turned the other cheek.
Find me this man who is most likely made of straw.
That man's crap. Satan.
What
all
if
right?
I'm not trying to rape your wife? What if I'm simply up in your face disrespecting you?
It doesn't matter. You're going down. It doesn't say just sit there and take somebody's tongue lashing just because.
That's exactly that.
That's what turn the other cheek means.
Where in the Constitution does it say you have the right to disrespect me?
Where does it say that Jesus said that in the Constitution?
Yeah, this is Gary from Fremont.
This is Gary from Fremont. Where in the Constitution?
This is Gary from Fremont. Seems like everybody out here forgot Amendment John 3:16. It says that I'm allowed to carry whatever I want. Wherever I need to protect myself and my wife and my truck.
I'm going
to
arm myself with as many cheeks as necessary. I'll keep turning them until you're dead, my friend.
There's you sort of like...
I'll keep emptying these cheeks until every single chamber of this cheek is empty.
As it turns out, my cheek is an RPG.
It's kind of weird. Like, you can tell these people probably have elaborate... fantasies about being attacked.
All they do is their morning runs. They're just like, please, someone jump at me.
God, what if? Oh God, what if they attacked my child?
I just want to break a neck.
Oh God, what if they tried to steal my car?
Yeah. And just coming the whole time.
It never says that in the entire Bible. It never says we should be everybody else's whipping post. If you come nose to nose with me, I'm gonna put you in your place. Don't disrespect me.
This guy, I'm glad this movie didn't download. I would not have been able to watch this on Bart.
It's. I actually liked it.
No, I liked it too.
Yeah, no, it's definitely infuriating at points. But then it did actually make me, because here's the thing. I like MMA. I like watching two people beat up each other. Yes. I like violent sports. At the same time, It did. I mean, and not to get into the argument talking about, like, you know, whether or not it's Christian or whatnot, but there is part of me that feels bad for liking any violent sport where the person has the chance of getting severe brain injuries.
But here's the thing: is like, I, whenever you go down that path, it's sort of like, look how fucked up people get in this sport. But like every sport, like no sport is super great for your health if you're playing it at a competitive level.
True,
like,
but
everything's going to fuck you up somehow.
Yeah, but the point of MMA is to punch your opponent.
In sports without the metaphor. It's like there's no...
Right, yeah. But I mean, you know, there's a lot of sports where a head injury is not part of the game. Like maybe not football.
It is, but it's only because... I mean, it's not as part of the game because...
It happens.
Because they're like extrapolating from the inherent... root of sports, which is two people trying to dominate each other.
Right, there's abstraction and then refinement of the abstraction, which leads to interesting stuff. It's why the birds do their little dances and the elk hit each other with horns instead of like running up and biting each other's necks out.
Right, yeah, no.
It's like there's like a natural progression towards not immediately killing your opponent.
Well, I guess
because it generally benefits.
That's what makes it a sport, I suppose, rather than a fight to the death. But it's like, but there is part of me where I'm just like, you know, that is the brain injury thing is a big deal to me. But it's still really entertaining.
I think he was.
Just remember that.
I'm not defending his definition of violence, but I definitely think there is. You know, whether it's like, is this moral or not? It's like, well, it's two people.
Shut up, nerd! And then you punch him.
No, it's two people that are, it's two consenting adults doing something. Like, whenever something consists of two consenting adults doing something of their own free will, it's like, I don't really care where they're doing.
No, that's what drove me insane. It's like, morally, it's like, wrong.
Yeah, right.
How can we jump in the middle of this?
Yeah,
I don't care. Like, the legalization thing was probably the most uninteresting thing to me, just because, I mean, I just was like, I'd like it to be legal, and it will be, and that's an eventual
thing. You're talking to some, like, incredibly... You know someone is going to be coming out hard against MMA if they call it cage fighting right away? Like if they say, like, thing I don't like about cage fighting is
they're locked
in
a cage.
I have that
clip too. Two men enter, one man leave.
Can't get out. There's
no
door.
Haven't you seen Thunderdome?
Gladiator.
Claim to be men of the cloth who are espousing this, and also some people who you...
That's Father John. What's his face?
John Duffy.
My name is Father John Duffel.
They call
I've been
tough.
A parish priest for 43 years. It's hard to obey the Lord's command, which is to love the other, even if the other is considered to be your enemy. Jesus is not violent or doesn't endorse violence. Jesus says that all the law and the prophets are collected in this one commandment, that you would love one another.
That's the challenge really each and every day in our lives when we have to decide whether or not we're going to listen to Jesus. Well, it is the role of the church to promote human rights. It is the role of the church to protect the dignity of the human person, to really believe that we are the light that can cast out the darkness.
Cage fighting does not speak about loving one another. Cage fighting is about hating one another, basically. I mean, just the whole notion of putting people in an...
Cage fighting does not flatter wealth. Cage fighting does not boast of its own possessions. Yeah.
I don't know. There's part of me that was like, well, you kind of knew where he was going to come from the whole time.
Yeah, but it was oddly, like in that context, at first it was kind of a breath of fresh air because at least he was sort of taking up the point of, yeah, no, this isn't like a super Christian thing to do to go like punch each other in the face.
Right, yeah. And
like, I don't really, am not that invested in, but you do kind of, it's kind of nice to hear someone say it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I was
I mean, he's the one who's making the most sense, like, logically speaking, right, even though yeah. I disagree with him, where these other guys have to do some serious fucking logical logical jujitsu to nice. Get to where it's like, nice. Well, really, what I'm seeing it is I'm showing my love by elbowing him in the dick.
Yeah, right.
And
yeah.
then giving the glory to God.
Yeah, right.
It's us now.
As long as God gets the glory, I can do whatever I want. Yeah, that's the way I look at it.
I rip out a Muslim's heart and I squeeze it into my mouth, but then I say, look how awesome Jesus is. Yeah. And then that way that I bring people to the flock in the pools of other people's blood.
It's yeah. the classic snap tapper. Don't really think about it that hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but I do. I mean, I get the trying to play something spiritual part of it. Because, I mean, if you watch Fight Club, they're having like sort of, they go in the basement, they punch each other in the face, they hug, they're having some sort of spiritual moment. Like it's not hard to understand where that comes from. Like it feels good not having to think about
anything
about. The
lack of abstraction keeps it close to the bone, and the brutishness of it is removes you from being romantic, where like you don't get the old baseball writer thing where they're all like, oh, and then the wonderful history of the sport and
the clout of the pine sent the ball like hurling over
it would be
the
autumnal air.
Punching.
It's there's something. I mean, when they're showing little kids, and he's like, I like hitting stuff. Yeah. You're like, yeah.
It's like cooking eggs. Yeah, right? you can
very,
do it.
It's very zen.
Yeah.
I felt bad for all the Christian wives. They were super Christian. That one wife just kept laughing at the end of every interview.
Oh, she that nervous laugh.
Oh, no. Just like, well, you know, last time he kind of, I mean, he had like 8 concussions, so I hope he doesn't go back. But it's his choice.
I've learned to contain the fear.
A poor lady. She's like, she has to deal with a guy who's got probably going to get brain damage from doing fighting. I don't know. That makes me sad.
Yeah, when the little kids are kickboxing each other before they've hit puberty, I'm like,
that was awful.
That's a terrible idea.
Wait, by the way, I don't want to derail it from that because that was really terrible. Like, you see the kid, like you can tell he just does not want to fight anymore. He's just like, and he's crying.
You don't want a traumatic brain injury before you hit puberty.
No,
like, that is permanent. Like, look how I turned.
And
out.
Not only that, but like just the shame of losing a fight in front of everybody, and not just in front of your dad, who's like, you're not gonna lose the next one, and then. You know, he's a kid, so there's cameras around. So he's like, everybody thinks I'm a loser. Like, he thinks, like, he knows this is going to go in a movie. There was part of me that was like, oh, it sucks. Yeah. Like, this poor kid. Even though, like, not a big deal. Like, he'll learn.
And that's what I think is, like, the good thing about training jiu-jitsu and all that stuff. Like, where people will make the criticism that, oh, you know, this kid's going to become a bully and all this and that.
Yeah,
but I think that's like such a good thing to get kids into martial arts early, because in a classroom setting, it's like you go out into the world and you no longer have the need to like test yourself against other people. Yep. And you also learn, which is I don't think you learn otherwise, is that there's always someone there that can kick your ass.
Right.
Like, that's a very important thing to always have that in the back of your mind. Like, like, you know, you go out in the real world and you think, oh, man, I could probably kick all these people's asses. But you still have that, like, well, there's at least three guys that I train with that can kick my ass. So right. maybe not. And it's sort of the idea that it's going to turn people into bullies, I think, is actually the opposite of what it's doing.
Yeah.
And most of the people I know who've taken up, like, you know, martial arts and stuff like that have all were just bullied people. And yeah. and they didn't go
on. It's definitely
on.
Like a collection of like the misfit toys more yeah. so than like bullies.
I feel like you have to pick an actual useful martial art and not one of the weirdo ones.
Yeah.
I just, yeah. Cause
like what? Like Muay Thai? Is that a weirdo
no,
one?
No, that's totally not. Muay Thai is actually.
It's all elbows though. You yeah. can't hit nobody with an
yeah,
elbow.
You can try
no, one's,
yeah.
no one's ever been like... hit with an elbow. Try and elbow me from here. Can you? Right now,
can you even do it?
People at home, it, these guys are, we're all, people probably don't know this, we all sit about 20 feet away from each yeah, other.
It's a, it's an auditorium size yeah, room.
We don't really like to sit close while we're doing
Vince
it.
Vince lives like a sultan.
Yeah. So go ahead, elbow me.
Okay.
You missed.
No. I like caught a little bit.
Nah, not even.
You know what I kind of thought about was like, I've been like preached to enough, because if any, like, if you play football long enough, there's just so much Jesus in
football.
Somebody
going to talk to you about
Jesus.
Oh,
there's so much Jesus in football. Yeah. And I've been preached to enough by enough people that like are like, listen, man, like I killed 17 people. You know, like you get a lot of those folks.
Yeah.
So like I was kind of wondering this where I think normal folks like us who aren't, you know, particularly religious, you kind of just understand that walking up to a guy on the street and sucker punching him and stealing his wallet is wrong and you shouldn't do that. Yeah. And then like a lot of these folks, you're like, I'm not sure if you didn't go to church. Like the Bible is literally what's keeping you from like breaking someone's neck right now. Like that is this, like the thin membrane
yeah.
that is like keeping you from going on a fucking killing yeah. spree. So like, yeah. I wondered if there's like maybe a little bit of that to some of these guys where they're like, man, I love God. I love Jesus. Where would we be without Jesus? And then like
probably
everyone else is
the
like,
guy's eyes out. Just right. punch each eye out one by one.
Right.
Like
you look at the audience and they're like nodding and someone's like, I wouldn't have as much spiritual peace. And then like his internal monologue's like, I'd be fucking killing somebody.
Yeah. That's
I
what
be
always
killing that guy. And I could be
out.
Killing that guy.
That's what weirds me out about that argument about like, I don't understand where an atheist gets its morals. Like if we were all atheists, then wouldn't we just be killing everyone?
I mean,
like,
how do you not go around just not shitting in people's chest cavities while you come right. in their mouth?
Yeah. I just like, is that what's
not that hard.
What is keeping? Because if that's what's keeping you from a, like a murderous rampage,
yeah.
then I would love you to continue
yeah, you
not
go
being
to
a
church.
Skeptic.
You should go to church right now.
Yeah.
Like I was raised going to church and stuff, but like it was definitely a very much more like. Kind of like Northern California church, let's
right.
just say like liberal church.
Yeah.
And there definitely wasn't any talk like there was in the movie of like, there's a devil out there and he's coming to get you.
Right.
Like
yeah,
this
yeah.
antagonism. There yeah. definitely wasn't any of that. So then like.
Yeah. If you went now, it totally would be like that.
Getting like exposure to like other
the
folks.
Enemy is out there.
Right. And like I was sort of this like passively religious dude. And then like after that, I was kind of like. Yeah, I don't think any of this seems like a good idea at all. Yeah. And then like I had a guy literally tell me. I found Jesus shortly after a guy cheap shotted me in practice. So I waited for him to go in the locker room. I turned the lights out and I beat the hell out of him with my football helmet.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's when I knew I needed Jesus. I'm yeah. like, yeah, it sounds like you did.
Yeah. It's like either that
that's
or
the
like,
one good instinct you've had in this life. Yeah.
Maybe Xanax or Wellbutrin.
Yeah.
Too.
Okay, good. Bye.
Yeah.
It's so that's weird.
I'm like, oh, these guys are kind of on a different level.
The devil used to be like, I think, more of an abstract concept too. Like maybe back when you were going to church, if they talked about the devil, they're talking about drugs or they're talking about, you know, adultery. Now I feel like when they say the devil, they are totally talking about
yeah,
people.
They literally yeah. think that the devil is like possessing people to do bad things against them, which
right.
is why they need an arsenal and teach their 5-year-old children how to shoot pistols.
Right, because there are devils out there who are going to kill your children. You have to right. protect them.
You're
going to
rape your wife yeah. unless you fight them in a parking lot.
Right.
Yeah, rather than the devil being just like, oh, you know, your own self, your own inner demons. Or, I mean, maybe not extreme versions of those demons, like the rapist ones.
By the way, I love that very brief subplot of, like, the crazy aggro guy.
Oh,
the guy
yeah.
who said, you never disrespect me, yeah, where it's yeah. like, a rival gym owner talks shit about his wife on Facebook. Where he's like, what is this, pro wrestling?
Yeah. And then
scary.
I love him hitting the tire with a hammer. Like, gotta get back in shape. And I was like, I have not worked out in a while because I do not know
mainstream or Western Christianity. Working out with
that's a pretty common MMA thing.
You see, I didn't know that.
We've taken feminized men.
Mm.
We've taken away their God-given attributes of aggressiveness, of competitiveness. We expect men to be prim and proper, and you got to be polite all the time, and you never respond with aggression and with force, almost like they act like females.
Now, is the gun on fire or on safety? Stop.
Yeah, he was kind of a mess.
Teaching his kids how to shoot. One of them like caught a shell right to the cheek.
Those are hot.
Yeah. And then he cut his own neck with a shell. Yeah, he was a mess. I mean, he had a completely shaved head. He had an iron cross. He's just an
angry man.
He was like very... Well,
at first, it's kind of like, look at this like buffoon. You know, kind of like just typical like angry American blowhard, right? He's Bill O'Reilly 30 years ago.
He's got opinions on sports.
Yeah, Bill O'Reilly, except he took steroids, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But then like it shows him at church and he's like, see that cross right there? That's a Crusader's cross. They've warped history. The Crusades were not about killing Muslims. Oh my God. It's awful.
Yeah.
So this is Crusader's cross. It's a symbol of freedom. It's a symbol of liberating the oppressed. And somehow or another, the history has been skewed. And even though the Crusades have...
It's like, which part of history got skewed?
I just, the stories this guy must tell himself must be so fucking horrific.
There's an insane filter between like his ears and his brain.
Or just like his negative feelings must be so contained inside of his ability to self-rationalize where it's just like, one time I got sad and then I killed my sadness and then I ate my sadness. I became an angel and I flew up to heaven and I said, God, I'm a ninja. And he's like, you are a ninja, motherfucker. Fucker!
Hoorah! Hoorah! Amen!
Then I woke up in a pool of my own blood, and I'm not really sure why.
All right, we got Perry ready to go.
Cool.
Are you guys ready to go?
I could use that. Pretty big deal. That shit bums me out, and I could use some Perry grip.
Yeah, I mean, time if anything,
Perry. I am glad I didn't watch that movie.
Keep you unbummed.
Hello.
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 Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
We sure can.
Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you great.
It's nice to hear your voice.
Oh, thanks.
It's like, it takes me back to childhood, and it takes me, like, I can hear your singing voice and your speaking voice, you know, and it's just, it's always a pleasure.
Yeah, because I raised you.
Basically.
Essentially, yes, you did.
In some ways. I spent a lot of time with my CD collection when I was in junior high.
Until it got stolen.
Yeah, that's true.
That was a dark time in your life.
It was.
Yeah. Fresno's a rough city.
Oh, man. Oh, you're from the No? Oh, man.
Yeah, Fresno County.
Oh.
Although Brett here is from your neck of the woods.
Yes.
Which neck?
Where is that? Wow. Yeah. That's fancy stuff.
Yeah, it's fancy now. It wasn't fancy back then. Like then it was all drinking in parking lots. Because there's no escape. I'm one of like three people from my graduating class who didn't end up back there or dead.
Ooh.
So Perry,
it's got dark.
Saw you guys. What was it? 2 weeks ago now. Nerf Herder. You guys rocked, by the way.
Oh, thanks for coming to the show.
No, thanks for putting me on the guest list. That's pretty. I felt like a pretty big deal.
It was a free show.
Well, don't cheapen it, you know. So you guys are you crowdfunding the new album? Is that?
Yes, we are, and it's really fun. Like I didn't really know. I don't think we'd be making a record if we weren't doing it this way. Because, in the old days, you would make a record and some friend of yours would pay for it, and then you'd have to feel bad when they lost a lot of money. And this way, it's like. You know, you sort of spread that out amongst a lot of friends. So it makes it more fun.
Right. And it does seem like the crowdfunding model would work especially well in music, because especially if you have like an enthusiastic fan base that's like eagerly awaiting, like you can just sort of go straight to them instead of, you know, trying to get someone else, get a third party to put up the money and then
get the A&R man.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah. You got to please that A&R guy. But this way, it's actually really fun. It's kind of like gambling a little bit. You put the pledge up there, and you don't know like, oh, are people going to like us still? Are they going to buy stuff? And then, you know, it's really nice. You know, you've sold some CDs and shirts and it pays for your record. So it's actually really fun.
I have a question. What does A&R stand for?
Artist and Repertoire. And I don't know what that actually means.
Right.
But I think it just means like this guy who, you know, he would come and sort of find talent. I think that was his job. And to distribute cocaine, that was really what he did.
It's an important job.
I was in a band in high school, and we had an A&R guy check us out, and he did not like us at all. What he said to us, he was very nice. He was like, you know, like your type of music is the type of music like I'd listen to, definitely. But I don't think the record company really wants to put you know, this kind of music out there.
What kind of music was it?
Oh, it was really bad. It was just
that guy had bad taste.
No, he had pretty good taste. Like, we were real bad. I mean, like,
he liked you, so he had bad taste.
No, he was lying through his teeth. Oh. Like, he hated us. But we were bad. It was fair enough. We sounded like, I realized this later, sounded like Hanson.
No way.
Oh, yep. Well, that guy should have signed you.
Yeah, seriously.
Well, like a bad Hanson who, like, I kept, I was
like
supposed
a bad,
to,
uncatchy Hanson I was who couldn't harmonize.
I was supposed to sing harmonies, but I kept getting scared. Like, but so every time, like, the part would come up, I would go near the microphone and then I would chicken out and I wouldn't sing.
Why did you think to come silent? And see you guys? Were you just playing at the pizza place he ate at? Or
he saw us, well, because when I worked at... When I worked at a Jewish camp, one of the camp counselor's boyfriends was an A&R guy for Columbia Records. That's not...
Wait, what is he doing dating a camp counselor? You're like,
well,
16.
She was like 21, and I was like 17. I was like a junior camp counselor, you know? And so he was like 21.
You make way more good connections at Jewish camp than you do at Christian camp, let me tell you.
All right,
did
listen.
Did you see his card, or did he just say that?
No, I saw his card. It was A&R Columbia Records. I was very excited.
Honda Accord. I was with a license plate that said Mr. Big. I don't know. He seemed legit.
He was a real dude, all right? And he did not like us. And it's okay.
Wait, was it at camp that he told you he didn't like
No, him? It was at my friend's dad's house where he came
A&R
to watch us.
A&R man said, I don't hear a single.
I tried to harmonize just now and I got scared again.
So would you just stand there silently?
No, I like, okay, so one of the lines
the story's
was.
The story's gone way too long.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we're supposed to be interviewing somebody.
Sorry.
So Perry, when you guys were on Arista, like you sort of recorded the album, then they picked you up and... You opted out, but you said before that they didn't like the songs that you were bringing them. Like, were they giving you notes at all when you were bringing songs to the label?
Yeah, there were some notes, but I think mainly there was this period of time where record labels were signing any kind of wacky band that people seemed to like. We had some.
It was called the '90s.
Yeah. People would buy these. Record labels were signing a lot of these bands, and I think at some point they just realized it was a giant mistake. And so a lot of bands were getting dropped. And I think with us, they were like, oh, well, let's, you know, give them some, you know, other bands to listen to, like this band Matchbox 20. That's the example we were given. It was like,
Jesus.
See, these guys write songs and people like them. And so, and it was, you know, of course it makes you feel like, well, why'd you guys sign us if you didn't like the songs we came up with? But at the same time, you know, the thing is, before you get signed, you're kind of writing songs to have fun, mm-hmm. and you're goofing around. I mean, we were just goofing around in our garage and trying to play on the main street in our town for fun for our friends. Getting signed was like just the craziest, weirdest thing that could happen. And then all of a sudden you get signed and it's like it's your job and people are going to get fired if you don't have a good song. And it really changes your process and you really do write some terrible songs, I think. So I think they were right.
Oh. Did you have any like particularly funny notes that they ever gave you?
No, not really. I mean, it never was that specific, but we just got the feeling so many bands we knew were getting dropped or making records and they weren't being released. We kind of saw that in the future, so we basically retreated and kind of retreated to our little punk rock group of friends, and that's where we ended up with Honest Dons, which was part of Fat Records.
Yeah.
Do you have song regret, or is it something you learn to get over pretty quickly? Like when you're in that situation where it's do or die and you're not entirely happy with how things are being handled, Like, do you put out stuff that you wish would just go away forever?
Oh man, that's a hard question. Cause I really like my job right now. I actually write songs for my job. I write a lot of songs and you really don't know. You kind of like years later, you'll look back and like, hey, that song was pretty good. Or, oh man, that song was terrible. Like you don't really, it's sort of your perspective on it changes. So usually when I write a song, I think, oh man, this song's terrible, but I've got a deadline. I'll turn it in. And then later on, I think, oh, it's okay.
It's kind of like you have to, I would imagine it's like you forget the person you were when you wrote the song and then you go back to it and it's like.
You're like, that loser was really writing some good songs or bad songs.
Do you ever get a feeling like you know that the crowd wants you to play a song when you're touring and you're just like, I do not want to play this fucking song?
Yes. And I can tell you specifically an example of that is people always want to hear our song, Pantera Fans in Love, which is a great song. Yeah. But I didn't write the song. It was written by the guy Dave, who was in our band for a while. And I don't even know
Dave's
where he
the
is.
Old bass player.
Dave's the old guitar player.
Oh, the old guitar player.
Charlie was the old bass player. We've eliminated a lot of people through our career. But anyway, so we I don't really want to play the song that he wrote. And I really like the song, but it's kind of his song. And so when people ask for it, I always say it's about Pantera. And so I always say we don't play it anymore because of Dimebag.
Nice.
That usually works.
Yeah.
I was kind of like, are you ever shocked by certain songs that become requests? Like I was sort of dumbfounded out of like all your catalog that the song that people really wanted you to play was Love Sandwich.
Oh man, that song has haunted us for years. I'm going to tell you a story about
that. Not
that
it's a bad song. I like the song.
Well, you're right. It's very unlike the rest of our songs, and it's incredibly disgusting and offensive and should not be a song at all. And I'm offended that it exists or even we're mentioning it. But what happened with that song is we used to, initially when Nerf Herder started playing, we were just goofing around and we would kind of goof around with different songs and we'd play, you know, a song for a show and then we'd never play again. And so we were just starting to take off and we'd play at bars and there would be kids would come and sit outside the bar and listen to us because they couldn't get in the bar. And so we played that song Love Sandwich one night and like a couple weeks later we played at this like an all ages place and where all these kids would go. And I remember we're setting up and this little girl, she was probably like 13 or something, walks up to the stage and she says, are you guys going to play Love Sandwich? And my jaw dropped and I was like really disgusted. But like these kids kept coming and asking for this song and it turned out that people liked it. So it just it's just one of those songs people always request.
Well, what are the lyrics to Love Sandwich? I don't know the song. Is it a lot? What is it about?
It's really just about a... It's kind of an ingredients to a sandwich, actually.
Well, why does it disgust you if a child likes Love Sandwich?
Well, it's really, you know, it's
they're not old enough to be engaging in a love
sandwich. I'm not going to explain it. So you just Google it and then it'll pop up.
Gonna put stuff
so I guess
your
like
buns.
Kind of the last question I asked about, like, are there songs you just do not want to play, but you know, the crowd wants to hear them. I guess I always think about that when I think about, not that you guys have this problem because you got some good deep cuts, but I think about, I mean, imagine like, I don't know, imagine Aha. Aha tours, you know, they do their big U.S. tour, you know, 30 years later or whatever it's been. Do you think anyone in that audience is like there to hear the deep cuts of Aha? Like they want to fucking hear Take On Me and that's it. And I pick on Aha because I know that they've actually been pretty successful in Sweden. They've like released a bunch of albums, but no one knows that over here. So it's like, they're like, no, we're like real artists and we want to be taken seriously. And we have a lot of content and all you fuckers want to hear is Take On Me. And if I never hear that song again, as long as I live, I don't care. Like I get that feeling. Like imagine the hell that you're consigned
to. Personal.
You must be consigned to be a one-hit wonder.
Are you in Aha?
I was the drummer for Aha, you guys.
Oh, man, I'm sorry. No, I bet those guys, I mean, I think when Buffy the Vampire Slayer first got big and people would always just come to hear us play that song, I think we were sort of like, oh, I wish we didn't have to play the song. But now I'm really just grateful anyone gets out of bed and comes to see us.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
I love playing that song, and I love playing any song that that people want to hear. So, So, I feel really lucky about that.
I mean, look at Flock of Seagulls. They can tour forever because of that one song, you know?
Yeah
but that, it's... sitting on the dock of the bay. You know that song they did?
It was great. Yeah.
Watching the tide.
You have to imagine there's got to be some resentment there, you know?
No, I mean, not according to them on the interviews. Like, whenever they're interviewed, I've seen online the guy, he's like, you know what? I am so glad people... love and connect with Sitting on the Dock of the Bay or whatever their song is.
That's a great attitude to have, though. He's a better man than me.
Because, like, what else is he going to do?
Well, that's, you know, the thing. Like, but
he loves touring, and they get to play all their songs, and yeah, but half to the crowd point, is there,
like,
to hear
let's
that.
Take Perry's point, though. Like, yeah. What if Love Sandwich became an international mega hit, number one, and then they never did anything again, and then, you know, you don't, what else are you going to do? And then 30 years later, he's touring on Love Sandwich, and
touring,
you know,
Perry's
admittedly embarrassed by that.
But, I mean, yeah, I understand. You know, it's like, it's an annoyance because that's the one song that, like, but then you really enjoy, like, the people who love your band. You know, the ones who are like, dude, I really like all of your deep cuts.
Yeah, no, so that's, but that's my point is, yeah. Like, it's great that there's the people who love the deep cuts, but if you're Aha without one, like, there's probably that percentage is a lot lower of the people who are,
sure,
like, the hardcore devotees. That's my point is that,
yeah,
if 90% of the crowd wants to hear that one song that you resent and hate,
sure,
like, that's a weird thing.
Yeah, but
that's
it's weird that, but then, you know, bless that 90% of the crowd for paying, you know, $35 to see one song, you know, yeah, that's, yeah, pretty cool.
So Perry, I've read an interviews like where you saw Weezer before the Blue Album came out, and you saw him like talking about like 12 Sided Die and uh-huh, sort of realized that you didn't have to pretend to be cool, to sort of write songs. This is a long question, by the way, so bear with me. I always thought of Nerf Herder as sort of like the funnier, more direct version of Weezer. Like, you guys and NOFX, I always think of as the two bands that sort of write songs the way I would, like, they sound like what I would write if I was in a band. And but then, like, you listen to Weezer, especially after Pinkerton, it's like he sort of gets personal, but then he immediately goes intentionally vague. Like, even in the new single, like, it sounds like it's kind of about Weezer, but then he says some stuff about, like, disco, and he tries to, like, broaden it. Like, is there a commercial strategy where bands sort of try to be intentionally vague or obtuse, like, as a way to, I don't know, make it less personal?
Man, that's a long question.
I told you. Sorry.
I think most bands are just vague in general with their lyrics. I mean, that was like a really exciting thing about hearing Weezer was, oh wow, there's really this sounds like this guy really did sit in his garage with a 12 sided die listening to Kiss or whatever. So, and I loved that when I heard him, but, I don't know. It seems like an example I would give is a band like U2. I really like some U2 records, but whenever I listen to their songs, I'm like, geez, this song is not really about anything.
Right.
This guy's just putting a bunch of words in there, and he sounds very serious about it and kind of sells it. But I've always thought like, God, this guy is not talking about anything.
Right. And like, for me, like, as a writer, like, my goal is always to be like super clear and very specific. And then I listen to music and it's almost like there's a strategy where you put just enough play in the machine to where people can put whatever they want in there.
It's like Twilight.
Sure.
And I wonder, like, when you write songs, like, is there a certain part of the mainstream that's like turned off by being too specific? I wonder. I don't know.
I think so. Like, I think when you mention like jerking off outside someone's window, there's a large percentage of people that just turn off the radio. But I think that, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of a risk. I guess it's a different type of songwriting. I mean, if you think of, I gotta say that U2 song about Joey Ramone is the worst song ever.
I didn't know what the song was about. I just saw the commercial where like silhouettes of U2 were singing, and then there was like Ramone's clips playing inside their bodies, and I wanted to like throw my TV into traffic.
Jesus.
That was irritating. I like U2, but that I didn't like that song.
Well, I think there's something to be said for, like, I said Twilight, in which, you know, Twilight, the protagonist is very vague so, mm-hmm, that the person can sort of, you know, project themselves onto that. But we talked about this a few episodes ago where there's that one, I think it's Kenny Chesney, he has that like mega hit that it's like cold beer on a Friday night. And like, yeah, he just there's he's got this these legions of fans who think that he's like speaking directly to them, like that's this specific niche, like, hey, I like cold beer and I'm Friday night too, this guy really gets me.
Wait, are you guys implying that you in Linkin Park songs is in my stepdad / ex-girlfriend? What the
Papa Roach was singing about my broken home. Oh. I thought,
oh,
but didn't you?
How did Eminem know I wanted to kill his girlfriend?
Didn't you say you wrote Led Zeppelin Rules because you were like trying to capitalize on the SEO potential of iTunes?
Yeah, that's really true, because Led Zeppelin wasn't on iTunes yet, but then I think it got released right before our record came out, which it wasn't a really good plan.
More of a scheme. It was a scheme.
Hey, did you ever get, actually, let me give some background to this question. First of all, I recorded Van Halen off of the radio. Like, you guys, it was new band showcase on Live 105 here in the Bay Area.
And a bad recording.
Yeah, I recorded off the radio, and I have this old demo version of it somewhere on a tape, whatever that old version of it was that didn't appear on the album. Did you ever get any hate mail or speech or whatever from the Van Halen song? Was anyone ever like, hey, fuck you, man, Halen rules?
Oh yeah, constantly.
Oh nice.
but and also from Sammy Hagar too. He was really mad about it.
Oh, like from the actual, not the fan base, but from Hagar himself?
Or his he was groupies? Mad, and no ill will to Sammy Hagar, but they interviewed him at the in some like the SF Weekly or something, you know, he was mad about it, and he called us names and stuff. I'm not going to repeat it because it's swearing. But he was really mad about it in that article.
That's awesome. That's the coolest thing I've ever heard. You made Sammy Hagar angry.
And speaking of Sammy Hagar, I was at the House of Prime Rib a couple of weeks ago with my brother-in-law. And the time before when he was there, Sammy Hagar was eating there with James Hetfield.
Wow.
Oh, man.
And he got his picture with him.
I hope they weren't working on a collaboration.
Jesus.
I don't know.
So, great. but didn't you guys have like a good experience with Courtney Love? Like their lawyer was totally cool with it, your Courtney Love song?
Yeah, I think they were like, she was like, ah, it's weird, but okay. That was kind of her attitude. And also, we recorded that for Fat Records, and Fat Mike knows her, so they have some connections, and so they could, I'm sure that was fine, and she's probably used to that kind of weird stuff, so
they have some mutual friends in the S&M community, or
I think so. Actually, I think she dated the drummer of NoFX for a while.
Oh wow, nice. He's a really good drummer.
He is.
When I first time I heard him live, I was like, there's no way they're gonna play as fast as they do on the CD, and then they played faster, and I was like, it must be like running a marathon to do
a whole show. I know. Yeah.
That guy is great. NoFX is such a, like, you mentioned NoFX before, but right, or us kind of being like NoFX, and we were definitely a ripoff lyrically of NoFX, so that's where all that came from.
Definitely, like, because I'm not huge, I don't pay attention to lyrics to a lot of bands that I listen to, just because lyrics don't, a lot of times they're not very good, but when I think of bands whose lyrics I actually enjoy, like you guys and NoFX are probably the first two that come to mind where I actually rewind and be like, what did he say there?
I also remember thinking there's no way he plays with one bass pedal.
Yeah. What?
Like, there's no way he play. I thought he had a double bass pedal.
Oh, sure. Yeah, but he plays with one bass pedal, huh?
Yeah. I had to see it to believe it.
Sometimes you just have to.
Yeah.
Wait a second. He doesn't play with a double bass pedal?
No.
Wow.
He's actually very outspoken in saying that double bass pedals are for posers.
Oh, all right.
Oh, man.
But I guess if you're that good at one thing, you can say that like anything that aids you he can do, it's for posers.
Yeah. So you have a lot of, I was looking at some of your YouTube views. Some of your songs have like millions. Are you making any money off of the YouTubes of all the YouTube songs?
Yeah, and follow-up question, how much money do you make every year after taxes?
I can't really divulge that, but I do. It's the YouTube money is okay, and then I actually sell a lot of those songs on iTunes, so that's actually a pretty good amount of money.
Like compared to, have you made more money on YouTube or on Nerf Herder?
Oh, absolutely on YouTube.
Yeah. I kind of suspected that, sadly.
Nerf Herder is just a hobby.
I don't know how I feel about that, honestly.
Yeah.
That kind of hurts.
I mean, but they're really good YouTubes at the same time.
Absolutely. I don't mean to knock YouTube work as spectacular, but that's feels like a loss to the robots.
It's just the way it is.
Robots win all the time.
Yeah. They win and they keep winning. Yeah.
I remember being very shocked at Christmas Ape, who's the editor of Kissing Susie Kolber, also in the Uproxx Network, which you're no longer a part of, right?
No, we still
are. Oh, no, you are. Okay. Sorry, I can't keep it all straight.
Easy.
Easy, Hoss.
Hey, I'm an unpaid laborer, so I can say whatever I want. He made some obscene amount of money, or, you know, like not obscene, but a lot, because he posted a video of there was a hurricane on the East Coast, mm-hmm. and there was a reporter talking. Someone jogged by with the horse mask, you know?
Yeah.
And he posted that on YouTube, and then he like said that I just got a royalty check for like, it was like a few thousand dollars because he had so many views, and it was like, holy shit.
I need to really sign up for royalty sharing.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of like the new record label thing. I get emails every day like, hey, we're starting our new YouTube network of advertising people, and we want to sign you up.
Like to be some sort of affiliate or something like that?
Yeah, to be sort of to share. I actually did sign with a company called The Collective that also has Annoying Orange and Pomplemousse okay. and some of these other people. And they negotiate your advertising rate and stuff and get you some more bucks.
Nice.
But that's sort of the new, like A&R guys, instead of like dating your counselor and signing you. Like if you had a YouTube channel, that guy would have come to your house and been like, oh, I can get you more advertising money.
Ah, God damn
it. Do you shout in a screeching voice that kids can't resist?
Yeah. They like it high pitched. Yeah,
they really do.
Yeah. They like it when it just peaks the red light.
Yeah.
Well, we
yeah.
made a demo tape, so maybe I'll put that on YouTube.
Yeah.
Do you still possess the demo tape?
I might.
Yeah, I want to hear it too.
But there's not enough of me singing because I got scared.
Just standing there.
But you hear my sweet guitar solos, man. I was lead guitar, so it was a lot of just pentatonic scales over and over.
You mean like all rock songs?
Yeah, but this was painfully pentatonic. It was like, this is the same solo.
That
should
have been your name.
Like,
painfully pentatonic.
And you guys really sounded like Hanson. You're the first person I've ever talked to who said their band sounded like Hanson.
Well, that was the thing. Like, I was always wondering, the guy who wrote all the songs and was the lead singer, like, he really liked bands like Bare Naked Ladies and stuff like that. And then when he would write the songs, and we'd play them and be like, we don't really sound like them. And then recently I listened to Hanson and I said, holy fuck, this was the music we were making when I was in high school. I hate myself so much for being a part of this band. But, you know, it was like one of those things where he was like one of those friends who like is like, you know, you're my best friend. And then I'm like, wait, are we best friends? I didn't know we were best friends. And so I was beholden to him. So I couldn't quit the band. Because, you know, like, because I was his best friend and I didn't know that. And I was like, all right, I guess we'll be best friends forever. He's a good guy, though, man. He's a good
guy. And you almost got signed.
We almost got signed. If only, dude, the only problem was that we sucked. That was like the only, if it hadn't been for that, we should have gone in my direction.
So Perry, Brendan touched on it. On that note, I kind of did want to know, like, what happened with you and Charlie.
Oh, it's just like, it's kind of a typical band story. Like you're playing music with people that just happen to play bass or whatever. And you're hanging out. Oh, this dude's cool. And you're like hanging out and play music. And then you become kind of successful and everyone's personality kind of gets more extreme. So, he was just more of a kind of aggro type guy than Steve and I were used to hanging out with. And it ended up being, you know, we would ride around in our van, like not talking to each other and everyone was scowling and stuff like that. So that's basically what happened.
So he was the Dave Mustaine of Nerf Herder?
I guess so. I don't want to say that. I mean, you know, but it just didn't, it was just more of a personality conflict.
Yeah. Is there like a Santa Barbara music scene where you guys were like a lot of the bands kind of know each other and there's, you know, back and forth between members and all that sort of stuff?
Sure, there was. When we started, there was a really great scene with Lagwagon was part of the scene. I don't know if you know them or...
Yeah.
Speaking of good drummers.
Have you ever met Toad the Wet Sprocket?
Yes, and I'm good friends with Glenn, the singer.
Awesome.
Oh, also, Ugly Kid Joe, I knew was a Santa Barbara band.
Yes.
Awesome.
And you knew them?
I sort of knew them. I used to write a column about music for the newspaper before uh-huh. I was in a band. And so I would write about those guys. And I was, they had a different name. They had, and then they got signed and they became Ugly Kid Joe. But they were like kind of this, they were actually from out of town. Like they came to go to school. So they were a little bit out of the regular, like insider scene. But yeah, they were really big for a
while. Did you know the band Makeshift?
No, I don't know that band.
That was my band.
The one that sounded like Hanson?
Yeah, the one that sounded like Hanson.
So where was that?
Out of Los Angeles. We were part of the Los Angeles Hanson Acolyte boom.
Oh, I heard about you guys.
Yeah.
I heard about you at camp.
So speaking of Lagwagon.
We were big in Hebrew schools.
Speaking of Lagwagon, the last time I was in Santa Barbara, we were walking around, we were like kind of bar hopping, and I said, hold on, we have to go to the Sportsman Bar. And like Perry was like kind of hoping I'd see you there.
Sure.
Like just some like vainglorious hope. And I walk in and like I get 10 feet in the door and some guy goes, hey, you're tall. This happens when you're tall. He goes, hey, you're tall. I have a tall friend. You should talk to him. And so I'm like, okay. And then he like leads me over to him, and it was the guitarist from Lagwagon.
It was Chris Flippin.
Yeah,
it was really
Chris,
tall.
Yeah. I still have his number in my phone. It was like this weird, like, are we obligated to like exchange phone numbers because we're both above 6'5"?
Was there like a very tall handshake that occurred? Like way above everyone's head? We were just like, hello.
Yeah. He was wearing a municipal waist hat, so we ended up talking about
rad.
That.
That's Chris Flippin.
I heard they're going to fuck you up.
Yeah. I was like, municipal waste? He's like, they're going to fuck you up.
It's like
the call and response.
I met a girl who used to date the lead singer of Municipal Waste.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Small world.
At Jewish camp?
No. This was in New York just recently.
Oh, that's stupid.
And I had to be like, yeah, they suck. But really, yeah, because she hated them because they dated Iron Reagan and Cannabis Corpse. And I was like, all these bands that I love. And I'm just like, yeah, they all suck, though. But really, they don't. She doesn't suck either. But if I had to choose,
I'd never listen to music again.
We also saw the guitarist for Municipal Waste on my bachelor party in Austin.
Fun times.
Yeah.
So Perry, having long been called, like nerd rock, you're like, oh, that's the nerd rock band. How do you feel about sort of like the state of the word nerd? Are you conflicted about it becoming a marketing buzzword, or does that feel like a victory in some way?
Oh man, it's really changed. Like when we started, I remember we started and we were kind of like dressed. We had our drummer had glasses and we wore these funny shirts or whatever. And someone said, hey, oh, I get it. You guys are nerds. We were like, yeah, that's what we're doing. Like it's an act. But, and we were called Nerf Herder, and a lot of people didn't really know what Nerf Herder was from the Star Wars movies. It was kind of weird, but now everyone knows Nerf Herder is this insult from Star Wars. Like the whole culture of being into Star Wars is more acceptable for an adult than when we started our band. So that's really changed. And like the whole nerd thing is now, you can say, oh, you're a nerd or something. It's not as much of an insult or something. I don't know.
I mean, do you feel good? Is that a good or bad, or just is it just different?
I think it's just different. I don't have a stance on that.
Did you have different Star Wars references for band names that you thought of besides like Nerf Herder? Was there any other band names you were thinking about?
The Womp Rats.
The Womp Rats. Tachi Station to buy some power converters.
That was Steve. Steve, our drummer, came up with the name. You have to have a name. So it's like, what do you do for a name? That's the hardest part.
Yeah.
I mean, you could be painfully pentatonic. That was a good name. That was Matt's band.
Yeah. I don't know how we came up with Makeshift, but
well, another failure. You can chuck them all up.
Just a lot of failures we're having. That's not a bad name, though, right? Huh? Yeah, I guess it's bad.
I think that was the fake name of Charlie's band in Lost.
Was it?
Yeah.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
No, his band was... Oh God, what was his band?
It might have been
Makeshift. It was definitely not. If it was Makeshift, I would have watched Lost with a bigger smile on my face.
You know what else I remember is in the early days of the peer-to-peer file sharing networks, you were misattributed to being the writers of that song Chewbacca from Clerks.
Yes. Yeah, it still happens.
Yeah.
I remember that.
What a Wookiee.
Yeah. I wear my Nerf Herder shirt around and then like I'll get comments on it. People are like, hey, cool shirt. And I'm like halfway wondering if they know the band or if they just think it's like a vintage like Star Wars reference T-shirt.
That could go one of two ways. Yeah.
No, it's the band. They definitely know the band. No one's going to look at a Nerf Herder shirt and be like, hey, I know that reference from Star.
Are
they're just
going
to be like,
have you ever worn a shirt with the reference?
I think people do.
I mean, maybe so, but
we're all disagreeing with you over here, man.
I think for the most part, they would know the band. I don't know.
Because so.
That happens.
The right answer.
That happens with, I think more so with band shirts than anything else. Is if I wear a band shirt, I'm always getting someone going like, oh, fucking cool, Napalm Death. Or, you know, like, you know,
My favorite is in high school, I had the Bad Religion shirt with like the cross that was like circled and like crossed out. And this, half of my high school lived up in the mountains, so they were like hardcore hillbillies. Like mountain people are terrifying. And this one like super hillbilly mountain guy is like, hey man, nice sweatshirt. I'm like, oh, you listen to Bad Religion? And I was like, that would have been really crazy, like if this redneck dude listened to Bad Religion. He's like, oh no, I just like the T-shirt.
Oh, see, that's sweet.
Yeah, religion is bad.
It is bad.
I was like, oh, okay.
I agree. Are you making a statement with that shirt?
Southern California will destroy you. Yeah.
Join my atheist church. We do meetings over at this church.
We meet at the church.
Well, it's the only place that they have community
pancake
gatherings.
Breakfast.
Yeah. Anyways.
This is Gary from Fremont.
This is Gary from Fremont. Goodbye.
So how many... Have you seen which... rom-com about where the main character is a guy who writes commercial jingles. As someone who writes jingles, like which one is the most accurate? Is it Juno? I mean, there's got to be like 10 of them.
Oh man, I don't think I've seen any of those. Although I did see Forgetting Sarah Marshall, where the guy did music for a show, TV right. show.
Yeah, the vampire.
Yes.
That didn't seem too accurate.
Yeah. Did you not see?
So you're not trying to make Russell Brand jealous? That's not a thing.
No. Okay. I'm not trying to make anyone jealous. I'm just trying to stay under the radar and get paid. That's all.
Is there a jingle? Are you allowed to attribute any of the jingles to yourself? Like, can you say, yes, I wrote the jingle for this and that product? Like,
oh yeah.
What,
sure.
Like what's one that I,
well, if you had a little kid, would hear this, probably hear Hungry Hippos, that ad for Hungry Hippos. And if you go into a Toys R Us, a lot of times this ad is playing over and over. Oh. So the Hasbro, I do Elephant, Hungry Hippos, Gator Goal, Elephant Fireflies.
Damn, you're killing it.
You did an Arby's one too, right?
I did an Arby's one. That wasn't very good. And then I do, if you're on the East Coast, if you live in Philadelphia, I do these ads for Wawa, which is the sandwich shop. It's kind of like Subway. And they're all kind of like psychedelic, funny. Those are funny. But anyway, I do those. And then, that's it.
Do you ever get someone shouting to play the jingle during a Nerf Herder set?
No, they just usually just yell "love sandwich."
People love sandwich.
They really do.
Have you met
back to that though? A love sandwich is just one slice of bread and one slice of meat. It's open faced sandwich. That's the right correct way to do it.
That's the missionary love sandwich.
Yes.
Right. Did you meet Joss Whedon when you guys did Buffy?
Yeah, we did. In fact, they would come see us all the time when we were playing in LA while they were filming the show. Mm-hmm. And so he would show up and like all the actors, not Sarah Michelle Gellar, because she was already kind of famous, but they would all show up and just be sitting there watching us play.
Is his head as huge as I imagine?
I don't think so. It isn't.
I imagine he's just got like he's just like a watermelon with like a little wave.
Metaphorically,
on top.
Because he's important now. Or,
no, he
or
has
physically?
Like a, no, like physically, like a large skull.
I know what you're saying, because I think in pictures you see that, but like in person, I never thought that. I saw him recently at, well, like 3 years ago at Comic-Con, and he was very nice, and he looked well proportioned.
Okay. I've seen pictures where he looks...
He seemed shaped correctly.
He looks like that Simpsons episode where they drink the nerve tonic and Ken Griffey gets that giant...
Terrifying
skull.
Someone told me that Matthew McConaughey actually has a huge head in person. They said they saw him in a bar in Austin. They're like, he's actually got a gigantic head.
Huh. What?
I don't know. I heard that.
Why would anyone note that? Why would that be a thing to share?
I'd notice it.
Sometimes you get up close to someone, you're like, damn, I got a big ass head.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Morgan Spurlock. Massive dome.
Really?
Yeah, no, went to Sundance a few years back. My friend came back from a screening. I was like, how was it? He's like, man, I had to sit behind Morgan Spurlock. He had that poofy-ass hair. I couldn't see anything the whole time.
Big skull.
Yeah, he's got a big skull.
Supersize my skull. Dumb. I'm dumb.
You are dumb. You dumb, dumb.
I'm dumb.
Dumb.
So do you have like your own, do you have a whole big studio of your own that you sort of can write jingles in during the day?
I have a studio. It's actually a shipping container that's converted into an office. It looks kind of like a hillbilly murder shack.
That's
it's
rad. Got like, that's super
it's
cool.
Got like a little porch that you could play banjo on. And then it actually looks... it looks really bad. It needs to be cleaned up. But on the outside, it's sort of a like beige, like metal, steel color. It looks like a dumpster, basically.
Is it? I mean, now that everything's digital, is it easy? Is it easy to record in smaller spaces? Is the amount of equipment that you need for a recording studio a lot less now?
Oh yeah, you don't need anything. You just need like a laptop and a microphone and a. Mm-hmm. You know, a bunch of plugins and stuff.
I am Lord. Yeah. I just, from our original interview with you, which you should not listen to because we were bad at podcasting. I just remember you saying that, yeah, my day basically consists of going into the kitchen. I make myself some oatmeal. I go outside and hang out for a while, fiddle with some tunes. And the whole time I'm thinking, that is the perfect life.
Yeah.
I wish I had some of Perry Grip's oatmeal.
Oh, man.
That sounds so good right now.
Sounds good. But you really, like, one thing, working from home is just like a way to become very socially... awkward and you become sort of like a troll living under a bridge.
A computer on a lawn chair.
Yeah, I've worked at home for almost 8 years now. Brett, how long has it been for you?
It's been 2-ish years now.
Yeah, I I don't think I was equipped to work in an office because every sort of job that I had where I had to go and meet people face to face, like the longest one I ever had lasted 9 months.
I get real mad for no reason.
Yeah.
And say things that I shouldn't at meetings about whether or not this is worth my time.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know. Yeah. It's good to get haircuts on the reg. You got to cut your hair.
Well, I read Survival at Auschwitz, and there's this one part where he stops bathing because he's like, what's the point of bathing? I'm in a concentration camp. And then one guy sort of smacks him in the face. He's like, no, you have to bathe because then it proves that they haven't made a beast of you. Yeah. And that's kind of the way I feel about working from home is that you sort of have to make an effort to have personal hygiene.
Yeah. Just, you're right.
It is a lot like the Holocaust.
It's a perfect metaphor.
It really is.
Yeah, you don't have to go into an office and they didn't have to go into an office. You are pretty much a survivor of the Holocaust.
I am a survivor of the Holocaust.
So brave.
Yeah, so very, brave. Very brave.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, police are here.
Yeah, they heard me say the Holocaust.
Yeah, it's Vince's metaphor.
This is the PC police, you guys. All right, this can't talk about the Holocaust in America anymore.
I knew we shouldn't have done this in San Francisco.
Someone call my lawyer, Gary from Fremont.
So I read this other interview where you said, where you were talking about that Rivers from Weezer called you at some point after Pinkerton and was like trying to set up shows and didn't know if people wanted to like hear them live again or something.
Oh yeah, that's really true. Like he, it was before the Green Album came out and I got this call out of the blue. It was like, hey, Harry, it's Rivers. And I'm like, whoa, that's crazy. Rivers is calling. And he said that they wanted to play a show and they wanted us to set it up in Santa Barbara so that, and we could call it a Weezer show and that they were ready to play again. And he thought he didn't know if people were going to want to see them or not. And of course, people went nuts and they just wanted to see them. and we opened for them, and like people were just like, get off the stage so Weezer can play. It was kind of terrible to open, but
what the hell happened to him after Pinkerton? You hear him in interviews, and it sounds like he was like abused as a child by the album Pinkerton.
I think it got bad reviews. It was like disappointing to them, and the sales were disappointing. And so I think he took it really personally. Of course, it's a great record. We toured with him on that record and loved the songs and stuff. I think it just and they definitely had that experience when we were on that tour with them, that people were there. They would play Buddy Holly and then people would just split.
Wow.
Because people really, they had that song was a really big hit. And so most people coming to see them were because of that hit. They weren't like longtime fans like they have now.
I do remember buying Pinkerton and like trying to force people to listen to it. I'm like, no, this is good. And people are like, eh. And then 5 years later, everybody acted like they loved it. What happened? Very confusing.
It's a weird story, and it's weird that they were able to come back. I mean, it's not really that common for bands to have that kind of thing, and then they stop playing and they come back and they're huge. I mean, it's like really kind of remarkable.
Yeah. Do you think like the music industry, it seems like when the 90s started out, there was like the surprise hit of Nirvana, and then there was the grunge, and then it sort of went into more indie-er sort of and punky stuff. And I kind of wonder like if the music business for like 5 or 6 years didn't realize that the entire first half of the 90s was like a commercial fluke.
I don't know. I think maybe they thought it would just keep going on like that. But yeah, you're right. It was a fluke.
They're like, no, the people actually want to hear like weird like art music.
Explains
like,
a lot.
And they're like, no, I think it's more. They're going to want to hear this like Limp Bizkit and boy bands. And then ever since, like, oh yeah, sorry. We were just confused for a few years there.
Yeah, but they killed it with the new metal. Yeah. Good for
they
them.
They did. That was huge.
Yeah.
Stained.
That should have been the band we started. We should have been a new metal band. Fucking Hanson.
You could have been the DJ.
I know. I could have been the DJ. I'd have been so good at that.
Was there ever, you said people sort of assumed that like nerd rock was a shtick. Was there ever pressure to sort of have like a look or like a shtick as a band?
Not really, no. But I guess as you like, you have to like wear some clothes when you're playing. So like, oh, I'll wear this. I mean, it is kind of a shtick.
Yeah. I mean, it's just weird reading, you know, reading like the dirt about Motley Crue and or like when Guns N' Roses talk about the 80s where they were hiring band members and it's like, it was look first and then hopefully they could play. Like they had to, I mean, first thing was like, oh, do they look cool enough to be like in a metal band?
That never factored into our band. But yeah.
You guys didn't have to do a lot of putting your dicks in breakfast burritos to get the groupies sent off of it, like the crew?
No, that was just voluntary.
Oh, is that a real story?
They had breakfast burritos back then? You never
read The Dirt? No, I never did read The Dirt.
Are you serious? Yeah. The Dirt is fantastic. Yeah, there's a part about it where they claim that they were like having, they were all living with girls who would pay their rent and you know, allow them to live in LA rent free, but they were having a lot of groupie sex and, you know, they had nowhere to shower before they went home. So they would like buy a breakfast burrito and like put their dicks in it because it was supposedly, it would take the smell off of it.
It's interesting.
It's the sort of coffee grounds of groupies, apparently.
I guess.
Throws off the scent.
That's a palate.
Yeah.
That's a helpful tip.
That's a terrible story.
It's not my story, man. Perry, so where can we, what's the site for your the crowdfunding for the new album?
I'm not sure, but I know that if you search for Nerf Herder Pledge, it will be in one of those links that comes up.
Okay, I will find it.
I'm not going to lie to you.
You should do that, too. You should do it right now.
I'm not going to lie to you. You are going to have to click on the internet.
Yeah.
Twice.
You have to go on the internet.
Perry, thank you for talking to us again. I feel like we're much better podcasters this time around, but maybe not. I don't know.
It was great last time, and I appreciate you. I was really worried you were going to make fun of me last time.
You were the high point of that. Our entire first 3 years.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
These guys are going to make fun of me.
I think it's still probably the high point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks for talking to us again.
Well, thank you very much. That was really fun. And I really want to hear this band Makeshift. I hope I can find this demo.
Yeah.
You might have to go to a magical island.
No, I'm going to put it.
I can do that.
I'm going to put it on YouTube and get that money.
Yeah, put it on there.
Yeah.
Maybe Perry could write a song about like bad high school bands, kind of like Young Girl talking about herself. It's a high school band sounding like Hanson.
The band was Drive Shaft.
Oh. Yeah, see?
Drive Shaft
that's
is the name?
Pretty close.
That was Charlie's band in Lost.
That's the Lost. Oh.
It's pretty close to makeshift.
It's close, but ours was makeshift, and we were
almost
way,
exactly.
We were makeshift. Way before Lost ever came out. We had songs like Surfer's Paradise. Neither of us surfed. We had...
don't tell me anymore. I'm sad.
Well, we had one song. It doesn't matter.
All right. Thanks, Perry.
Right. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Talk to you. See you later.
See ya.
Bye.
Yeah.
I don't know why you do the things you do. That was one of the songs. It was like kind of a blues rock thing that we tried a little bit.
Well, yeah, if you're playing pentatonic scales.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I like to surf and you like to surf, so let's surf together every day.
Guitar solo. Ding, 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 ding,
ding, ding, ding, ding, ding, ding, ding, ding, ding, ding,
surf, but dip, surf, surf, surf.
Da, da,
surf.
Da, 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 da.
Hey, fuck you guys!
We weren't that bad.
Yeah.
No, we were bad. We were real bad.
Oh, I got a Joe King freestyle.
No, yes. No, no,
no. Yes. You don't play it?
Let's do
not
it.
One of his best.
Okay,
not one of his best.
Wait, I'll play
I want to hear it.
All right. Well, I did want to play this Kirk Cameron clip because I think this. First of all, this dovetails perfectly with the persecution complex of Fight Church. And I think it's a weird new direction that the fundamentalists have gone in.
This is Kirk Cameron.
Hi, Kirk Cameron here. Yeah. I love Christmas. My wife loves Christmas. And my kids love Christmas. I mean, who doesn't love Christmas?
All right, so far he's super creepy, but so far, you know, all right, he's making some sense.
He's made it clear he's got a wife.
Yeah, yeah.
He is not.
Well, he has had actually, sex.
Wait, wait, wait.
2 days after we
He said, launched, well, actually. Uh-huh. There's a well, actually, to... Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Saving Christmas website. An anti-Christian group out of Turkey, of all places.
It's not that
Which
weird,
is code for Muslims.
Muslims, yeah. Of all people.
Dirty, stinking, goat fucking ragheads.
Yeah. Wow.
That's what that was code for.
Yeah,
that was polite.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hijacked our website and replaced our trailer with some hate-filled propaganda and promises to destroy, well, everything that Christmas is all about.
Presents? They're going to take our
candy.
Trees?
I hate tinsel! Coca-Cola!
Halloween costumes.
Polar bears drinking Coca-Cola.
Turkeys filled with Coca-Cola.
Jews eating Chinese food.
Magical coins made out of sugar.
Stars on the top of trees.
Stars underneath the trees that you have to dig out to get your presents.
Jesus crying and Santa laughing.
I wish I lived in that Christmas. Jesus is like, why? And Santa's like, I don't know. I buried the stars under there. It doesn't make any sense. It's a weird Christmas. I'm sorry. And then they both cry.
Does it actually prove the title of the movie? Will you and your family join me and my family this year?
So the question I have,
I'm confused as what he's asking. He's no, sad no,
okay,
he got
so
hacked.
He's saying
he's sad he got hacked.
He's saying that their website got hacked.
Yeah,
by a group
of Muslims.
By Muslims
who want to destroy everything that Christmas stands for,
which is the weird stuff.
And they put like a lot of terrible messages about how Santa's a piece of shit.
What?
And no, I don't know. And the baby Jesus is an asshole.
He's actually just a plastic doll.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
your tiny baby God is a plastic doll in a high school gymnasium.
And also, so the same week that this came out, there was this Canadian chick who, it was like a big story on Canadian news where she applied to work at this tourism company, and they like made, she said that the people made fun of her, and
a Canadian tourism company,
yeah, and said that like they didn't hire because she was a Christian and they made fun of her. And then someone did some digging and found out like that company doesn't actually exist. It's like the tourism company had done this in a couple instances.
Are you saying Kirk Cameron hacked his own website?
So my question is, are these Christians false flagging themselves, or is there like a group of dedicated trolls, like sort of dedicated to to being the manifestation of all of their fears.
Bit of both.
Yeah.
For sure.
Half and half.
Half and half.
Because there are trolls out there who would love to do that.
Right. Yeah. And so isn't the Gamergate people kind of like into the atheism?
I don't want to fucking talk about them. Okay. Like, that is such a god-awful nightmare of just human filth.
There is a weird...
What did you call them? Like crypto-fascist or... Like proto-fascist capitalist lonely boys?
Yeah, with a Z. Lonely boys with a Z. It's like the worst features of humanity on display. I don't want to talk about it. Like, it bums me out to such a level that I have a heart. Like, I'm fascinated by it in a car wreck involving myself. Mm-hmm. Like, if I had to watch my own death by car wreck, and I'm like, oh, gross. Oh, God, it's me. Oh, gross. Oh, God, it's me. It's just a cycle that I can't escape.
One thing I've never understood, there is like a very strong overlap between atheism and like hardcore misogyny too.
Yeah, the MRAs.
It's the logic bros, which has now been coined. It's the Dawkins crowd where they're like, hey, look, rape's bad, all right, but like getting raped by spaghetti is the worst.
Yeah,
you know what? They always go to the thing where they try to logic everything down to its core, which in doing they sort of ignore all historical context.
Right.
And yeah. It is exactly the stripping away of context, which is the most important part of any human interaction that makes them so alien and unlikable.
Also,
like, hey, what if we never had to think about what other people thought about this?
Well, who's the other guy? Not Dawkins.
Harris.
What is it?
Harris and Dawkins are the
Hitchens.
Hitchens.
Yeah. Hitchens is dead now, though.
Right. No, but Hitchens.
And everybody
also
loves him, and everybody loves Bill Hicks. And when I hear him, I kind of just hear like guys that are like a little bit smart yelling at really, really dumb people.
All right. Well, let's not conflate Bill Hicks and the rest of these guys, because Bill Hicks is funny.
But right. But if Bill Hicks is
Bill
funny,
Hicks
but
is the Tool album guy.
Yeah.
Bill Hicks is funny, but I also like hear a lot of his stuff, and I think that guy would be a fucking MRA like right now.
Okay, I feel you. You're not wrong. I see where you're coming from. But because he's not, he never really went there.
Right.
So I wouldn't.
I hear a lot of the same traits, I guess.
Right. It's kind of the you guys are all idiots. Logic is logic. Why is everyone so fucking stupid?
Yeah.
But that's also like what a comedian does. I mean, a comedian is supposed to look at that kind of logic and calling things out. So yeah. I just don't. I'm just besides the point. I'm just saying Bill Hicks is hilarious. But Hitchens will definitely do the like anti-woman thing. Like he'll just be openly like, you know, women are just not as funny as men. And
it's a good voice impression.
Women can't be funny. They are incapable of being funny. And like,
and they have a hard time enjoying Burnett, Bronca, Bruce.
They're not funny like their mother or their father. They're only funny.
She was only 17 years old.
She was only 17. Yeah, so like he kind of, I mean, it's the same kind of shit. He definitely was trying to logic his way into being misogynistic. And I hate when people say women aren't funny, because like if women aren't funny, you know, I don't say that as a comedian. I say that as like a fan of Judge Judy. You know, like Judge Judy is fucking hilarious, and yet you know you completely forget about hilarious people like Judge Judy or like all these other people. Like she wrote a book called Don't Piss on My Leg and Tell Me It's Raining. She's hilarious. You're going to tell me she's not funny? Like, it's just, I hate blanket statements.
And, you
like
know, that. she's a tough broad.
She's one tough motherfucker, you
I
know?
I like that about her.
She tells it like it is. Have you guys watched Drunk Judge Judy on YouTube yet?
No.
Is it actually her drunk?
No, they just edit it so it's her looking super drunk. Like, you know,
they
she
just
gets,
slow it down.
Yeah, well, and you know, sometimes she gives like those surprised looks. It's her asking weird, strange questions and then kind of like looking super drunk. You have to see it. I can't explain it.
We got a couple questions and comments from the Fraught Nation. Fraughtcast, I'm currently doing a master's degree in finance, and I thought Brendan in particular might enjoy this gem of a sentence from a group assignment I'm trying to edit. And man, strap on your boots to try and parse this one.
All right, here we go.
Parsing boots. Put on your
parsing boots.
Plus 12 boots of parsing. I've been playing a lot of Diablo.
Stand aside, Paladin. This is my show.
Quote, both artifacts level and espoused beliefs and value level.
You already lost.
wait.
Both artifacts level and espoused beliefs and value level of corporate culture are well established through changes in structural process and organizational chart.
Well established by whom exactly?
An organizational chart? Why is that singular? How could that ever be singular?
And the strategic goal, streamlining the operation process.
Wait, where's the end of the sentence?
Should I just read that fast and maybe it'll make more sense?
Where's the end of the sentence?
Yeah, do it fast.
Both artifacts level and espoused beliefs and value level of corporate culture are well established through changes in structural process and organizational chart. And the strategic goal, streamlining the operation process.
Is there a question?
I don't know.
What? Why does it end on a semicolon? You have to finish.
Say it one more time.
I think it started on a semicolon.
It's just all semicolons. We'll explain this
later.
Wait, all
right. Maybe if you put a period after every word. Yeah.
Both artifacts level and espoused beliefs.
Both artifacts level
and espoused beliefs.
No, espoused beliefs is in the end. There's another level. Stop on the other level. Here.
Both artifacts level and espoused beliefs and value level of corporate culture are well established through changes in structural process and organizational chart. And the strategic goal is streamlining the operation process.
There's only one chart. There's like in business school, they're like, we're going to show you the chart now.
I feel like
organizational chart time, boys. And they dim the lights and there's candles.
I think it sounds like something like if I heard at like an orientation at a job, I'd be like, holy fuck, I cheated my way into a job. Like it sounds like I should understand it, but I don't.
Yeah. It sounds like the part in Billy Madison where they have James Carville come on and he just sort of
talks.
Or no, that was old school, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, where they're doing the debate.
Hey guys.
Anyway, I have no idea what that means.
I gotta go do trivia.
All right, get the hell out of here.
I love you guys.
Yeah.
We love you too, man.
Yeah, get out of here, yogurt baron.
Yeah, I am the yogurt baron.
It's totally a baron.
Dirty
ship.
Yogurt.
Chobani for life, motherfucker.
Dirty yogurt pimp.
Fuck that fat J.
Hey, Faye till I die, yay.
Is it Faye?
Yeah.
Oh, I gotta learn how to pronounce it.
Strain your fucking enzymes.
I thought it was Faggy. Well, I was wrong.
Yeah, way to do market research, asshole.
I don't need to do market research. My research.
I'm handsome.
Yeah, I'm good looking. I eat yogurt.
I look the right ways when they tell me to look over there. I look in the.
Did you guys see the latest Schnitzel Bob fan fiction?
Oh no, hold on, I didn't.
It's pretty great.
Okay, well I'll wait and then I'll go.
Okay, this is from Matt Lieb's yogurt commercial. Vince heard the softest of knocks on his door. He sighed, knowing it could only be one man. Come in, Lieb, he growled. The door opened. Matt peeked his head in. How did you know it was me? Vince sat back in his chair and stared at the ceiling. Who else? He asked, more or less rhetorically. He sat back up. Anyway, what do you want? He watched as Matt began the nervous shifting he always did whenever he asked for something.
It's so real. How the fuck does he know me so well?
He observed the way his employee, and in some small way, his friend, half raised his left foot and swiveled it on the ball. The effect was unflattering. Vince thought on the fact that many of Matt's mannerisms were unflattering. Well, sir, it's my grandmother. She's very sick, and she probably won't make it to the end of the week. She lives across the country, and I'd like to go visit her as soon as possible. Where does she live? Vince asked. New York, sir. Vince didn't respond or even look at Matt. He got out of his chair and walked over to the window, observing the pigeons that populated the sill while absentmindedly scratching his ass. Where are you really going, Matt? He could hear the nervous shift in Matt's posture. My grandmother, Matt began meekly. Vince turned to face Matt and watched as he deflated under his boss's stern gaze. Yogurt. What? Vince genuinely hadn't heard the answer, muffled as it was by shame, sadness, and a mustache. Yogurt. I'm doing an online yogurt commercial. Vince rested on the edge of his desk. He considered his options. Matt was mostly obedient and, more importantly, deferential. Unlike the straight-laced Allison or the hapless Laramie, Matt could...
Laramie should change his Twitter name to the hapless Laramie.
Matt could be routinely put upon without reacting adversely. And while he'd obviously lied, a dog needs to be let off his leash every once in a while. You go do your yogurt commercial, Vince. Vince watched Matt's reaction as he gave his blessing. But I expect you to file stories while you're there. And I want my laundry done immediately before you go and after you come back. Otherwise, I'm going to have to wear tea towels as underwear again. And I don't think anybody wants that, do they?
No.
Matt was still clearly processing the information and the implied threat. It was more than he'd expected, and he grinned internally at the thought of his trip. Yes, sir. I mean, no, sir. Laundry will be done, sir. I'll clean those underwear so thoroughly that you could eat off them. Vince grimaced at the thought. He knew what went on in his underwear, and he knew that no amount of cleaning could erase some things. Just get out of here, Vince said. He shook his head as Matt left and wondered if he'd made a mistake.
It's so amazing, too, because I totally, to do the first commercial, I totally lied to my boss. And I didn't say anything about my grandmother, but I said that I was sick over at the radio station, you know, where I take
sick with
calls.
Yogurt.
Yeah.
He knows me so well. I don't.
His version of Burnsy is also amazing, where like Burnsy comes in wearing like a backwards baseball cap and a surfboard under his arm.
Right, and just sits on someone else's desk.
Yeah.
All right, love you guys. Bye.
Bye. All right, bye. Well, you know, if Matt's gone, we might as well just end it. Yeah. Brendan?
Those some farewell reggae horns. All right, well, thanks to Perry Grip for coming on.
I hope this was better than our last Perry Grip episode.
Do an internet search with your preferred search engine for Nerf Herder Pledge, I believe.
I think it's under...
And then it's one of those links.
Pledge Music? I think it's Pledge
gotta
Music.
Gotta click on the internet.
I'll put it up.
All right. Yeah. So thanks everybody for listening once again. Email us, frogcast@gmail.com. Vince, what's the Google Voice number?
You really don't remember it at this point?
I really don't.
415-972-6418.
415-275-0030.
Excellent. All right. Well, until next week, good night and good chins.